State Affairs Committee meeting together, and we have Lori here and
Lauren, John.
Lori. Luke, Lori and Luke.
We're sticking with the L's.
That's right.
Helping us over here on the controls. We do have a number of people that have signed up in the audience. Mostly, it looks like one to testify and a couple to maybe answer questions. And thanks to our Committee 8 for getting everything set up for us here. And we have present Representative Dahl, Representative Coghill, Representative Johnson, Representative Johansson, and Representative Roses chairing as the vice chair for Representative Lynn, who is out. And I spoke with him just this last Tuesday evening, and he's feeling pretty chipper. Actually, he's looking better than I've seen him look for a while. He's got more color in his face than he had, but unfortunately his wife has had a stroke and is having some serious problems, but he is anticipating coming back here this next week. So we look forward to his return and certainly hope his wife has a very speedy and successful recovery. So with that, we're going to move forward. What we have for us today in front of us is House Bill 299, and Representative Keller, would you like to come forward and present your bill?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee, for hearing the bill. I think it's a really good one. So,
good enough for me.
We tend to believe in our own bills.
Surprise, surprise. Huh? As a state representative, I represent about 15,000 people, as do you. It's a perfect title, representative. It's descriptive of what we do. It's our form of government, you know, whether you're talking about the governor, the lieutenant governor, senator, school board member, you know, representation is the key. It's what many have died for. It's our system. I'm proud of it, and it's a great way to go. At some level, I'm accountable to every one of the 15,000 people that I represent. I promise them, like you probably have, that I'll be as accessible as I can to each individual. At another level, I'm accountable to every constituent who voted for me. We're in a majority rule system, so there's another level of accountability there. And yet another level, I have an accountability to the people who contribute to my campaign when I run for office. If I accept a contribution from a sports fisherman that is not in my district, I pick up some level of accountability to that sports fisherman, as I have, by the way, to explain if I vote for something that looks like it doesn't support that issue that he stood for when he gave me that check. Of course, the level of accountability to a contributor varies with every circumstance, but it is there. As you know, the APOC reports are online, readily accessible to each one of us. I went through and I started thumbing through the different contribution accounts, and I came to the conclusion that well over half, most of the contributions were made by people who were out of district. That disturbs me. I went a little further and I picked out three candidates, and none of you, not my predecessor, but I just wanted to get some numbers of what's going on. So I asked research to do some work for me. The three I picked, I won't say they're random, but I didn't cherry pick. One of them, 80% of the funds came from out of district. Another one, 69%. Another one, 74%. And I think that you would agree that it's representative of what the whole state process, how it's working. Of course, we got the obvious. The bigger the war chest in a campaign, the better chance you got to win. We all know that. It's in front of us right now with the presidential campaign and the things that we hear in the TV and the radio. From a voter's perspective, it's always easier to approach a candidate or your representative if you've got a record of a donation that went to them. You know, it just gives you a position of confidence to approach them. And, of course, a number of shrewd contributors and people that are astute out there give to all sides of a campaign, you know, so they've got to have that access. HB 29 is simple. HB 299 is simple. It just says no more poaching. If you can't vote for a candidate, you can't give them a contribution. Straightforward. That's all it is. It means that if a constituent, using the 80% figure of the one candidate, if a constituent gives me a dollar, gives one of us a dollar to run for office, that dollar donation is not made insignificant by the $4 that might come from outside of district. So it really increases the value of the dollar for a constituent. Therefore, I attest accountability. Gone will be the campaign contributions from PACs, from lobbyists and special interest. Campaign contributions will only come from the voters. Under HB 299, the only group that can contribute directly to a political campaign will be a political party. The reason HB 299, and I know this will be some question to you, and Jim has done a lot of work on this, and I think he can answer it pretty easily. The reason HB 299 does not affect free speech is because it does not in any way limit what a PAC can do. A PAC can spend as much money as it wants to spend to oppose or to support a candidate. It just can't do it through the organization, a campaign organization. And, of course, anyone in a PAC or a PAC itself can still contribute to a political party, and the funds can go that way. HB 299 is set up so it will not affect the November 08 elections anyway. A lot of campaigns, including mine, are operating on the old rules. We're taking money from wherever. But this, starting in 2009, if this were to pass, then these rules would go into effect. Hopefully, from my perspective, this will cut down the costs of campaigns. You look through at the cost of a House race, you see a number of them, $40,000, $50,000, $100,000, and it will, I think, because you've eliminated a deep pocket influence in the campaign contributions, I think the overall cost will go down. I respectfully urge your support on this. I'd like to get it out. We have a 90-day rush, and unless you see major problems, I'm eager. And Jim, like I say, has done a lot of legal research on this bill. And in fact, he conceived the idea, and I just grabbed right onto it. I think it's great. And so I want to ask him, did I miss anything? Or anything you want to add?
I think you're doing just fine right now.
Questions then.
Okay. We'll go to questions and if the committee would please stick to questions, and when it goes to the committee discussion, then we'll get into some of the philosophical points. But I'll start off with a question. You stated that you thought this would virtually eliminate the power of the PACs. I feel that it does the opposite. I think it gives the PACs more power. And let me give you an example, and then I'd like for you to respond, because maybe I missed something. Did you not say that in this bill that the PACs could continue to have independent expenditure for or against a candidate, but they couldn't donate to the candidate's campaign?
Yes, I did.
Okay. So if you had a scenario by which you represented a very low-income area, for example, I do, very low-income area, and I wish you to pick my contributions as an example, because I think you would find almost nothing from my district, because they don't. But if I had a candidate running against me who had a tremendous amount of support from PACs, you've tipped the scale to the point to where the individual that isn't getting contributions from the PAC is going to have no money, whereas the other person is going to have lots of people campaigning on their behalf, even though they didn't give money directly to the campaign. How do you respond to that?
I did not mean to say, if I said that it would decrease the power of PACs, I did not mean to say that. What I meant to say was that they will not be able to give to the candidate. They will still be able to outspend any money, I suppose, that would come from your district, but it would be under their name and their program, their administration, and
going on that point.
And then I also would like to say that I didn't really understand your question probably totally, but I think that in your case, you're much more better, you're better positioned, because I would contend that 50 $10 donations gives you a whole lot more minimum in a campaign than a $500 contribution from one exterior. And anyway, that's
Representative Coghill, you want to follow up on that point?
Yeah, under Section 7 says that they can't take more than 50% of their money on a single candidate, otherwise it's controlled by the candidate. So am I not speaking into this? I just got chided by our reporter. So I guess what you're saying is that the 50% issue is still going to stand as it is. I'm trying to think how effective that's going to be under this new scenario for a PAC. If they can't put more than 50% of their money against or for a candidate, I'm trying to think how that would affect what Representative Roses was saying. But was it your intention to leave that in there? Was there any thought about changing that scenario, and what was your thought process around?
I'm going to give Jim a chance here to respond to that, but I want to say that the intent was to leave that alone.
Through the chair, and for the record, Jim Pound, staff representative Keller, Representative Coghill. The reason we did that is because an existing statute, which is not here in front of you, there is the ability for creating groups. I hate to say the word 527s because, fortunately, Alaska law is a lot different than that, where there's a requirement to say, for example, we are the group for Representative Coghill for re-election, or we are the group against. Uh-huh. It specifically has to have that name in it. So a PAC can create a group, but we wanted to make sure that at the same time we did not change their limits of how much they could spend in a particular district. So that's why we left that language in.
And, Mr. Chairman, that is probably the key difference from what they could contribute, which they will be barred from doing, to how much they can spend. And that is a different dynamic that I'll have to chew on a little bit.
Anybody else want to follow up on that same point before we go to another question? Okay. Representative Johnson.
Do you not see a scenario where groups could form and you could, excuse me, even break it into Senate districts? And let's take the Republican Party is going to form a group for every Senate district and oppose all the Democrats, spend half their money on each candidate and raise an unlimited amount of money, expend what they wanted to say what they wanted to say, and theoretically, well, you can't, the candidate can have no impact on it or not any input into it. And so we're sitting there with these, 20 groups that target and can basically run amok and raise and spend as much money as they want to do and say what they want to say. And under this, they're only spending 50%, not more than, on each district. And I fail to see how that advertising out there without even the candidate's input is going to benefit the election process. So if you kind of address that scenario that I've just painted and it just, I just see, you know, chaos.
From my perspective, I don't foresee the problem because of the fact that I'm thinking of the labeling. If a group forms and clearly says, you know, XYZ, you know, support of this particular candidate, I think that, and then you'll have the campaign itself. I think that there's a process that'll go on to be an awareness, and I don't think that's the way I was thinking about it.
Yeah. Follow up.
So, and let's assume these groups are all named Citizens for Better Government, okay, paid for by Citizens for Better Government in support of conservative causes. Clearly identified, clearly registered with APOC, and running this type of campaign. What would prevent someone from doing that?
I'll let you through the chair, existing statute, they would be required to use the name of the candidate they were for or against in their disclaimer.
That's existing law.
So it's Citizens for Conservative Government in support of Tom and Fred, or Tom. What keeps them from spending as much money as they want to, blasting or in support of another candidate with unlimited funds?
Well, through the chair, Representative, first of all, you were referencing political parties. Political parties are limited on how much they can give to a candidate, period, in existing statute, which is, I believe, $5,000 for a House, $10,000 for a Senate district. And The way this is written, the contribution restrictions are by district. In other words, senators have two districts to which they can get their campaign contributions from. House members, 1. Governor, lieutenant governor, 40.
I think you're misunderstanding. A group can go out and raise as much money as they want to raise from any source they want to raise it. And this group forms a by Senate district subgroups. And 50% of the money goes to one candidate and 50% of the money goes to another candidate. And each subgroup is named Citizens for Craig or whatever, or Citizens for whatever. They can spend as much money as they want to independently, say what they want to say without the candidate having any input, and I fail to see how that's going to do anything other than remove accountability of what's said in the campaign from the candidate. And I don't see how it would limit donations. I can't see how it would limit the amount of money spent. As a matter of fact, I think it would be exacerbated. I could see a cottage industry starting of political advisors that do nothing but form groups and say, we're Senate N or Senate O, and we're going to support these two candidates, 50% here, 50% there, go out and raise as much money from corporate donations as much as they want to, and without consulting the candidate, say and do what they want to say. I fail to see how that's going to do anything except make the candidate less responsible to their constituents. And can you address that? How does this bill address that scenario?
Through the chair, I mean, that's the way it is now. So you're saying the dynamic would be that if the groups cannot donate direct, I'm asking you, if you're saying that if we change the dynamics here so that the groups cannot contribute directly to the candidate, then they will form. I would say that is, you know, we're just imagining a scenario here. Have a new dynamic in our campaigns. You know, that's what you're proposing. You know, and I I guess I would say that that could happen now. And I think that all the way it is right now, you know, with the PAC contributions with 80%, I say PAC, but 80% out of district contributions that are from out of district, that level of influence is already there. But it's not visible. I would contend that with what we're proposing here, this would become more in the sunlight. So that if a because the group that raises unlimited funds has to show where it comes from, you know, and how they're spending it, just the same as they would in a campaign. And I think they would.
And you know, I don't want to argue this, and we can get it in if we get to committee discussion. But that removes accountability from the candidate. It takes what is being told to my constituents out of my hands and places it in someone else's. And by law, I can't have any influence on that. I can't have any knowledge of that. So it, in my opinion, and that's strictly what it is, it removes accountability of the candidate. The PAC can go out there and say his opponent's, you know, sleazy and bad, and I say, I didn't have anything to do with that. I don't know anything about that. Where if the money's coming to me, the money that I spend, I'm accountable for. If I say something, there's going to be someone coming to me and say, how do you know that? Where'd you get it? And if it's wrong, I'm going to be held accountable for that. Whereas now, so I think what this does is decreases accountability of an individual candidate. In the second thing, I have real problems with the statement that, and I want to phrase it properly, that contributions influence my decisions. And I have a conversation, I've said this in this committee many times, I have a conversation with everyone who wants to meet with me face-to-face to give me a contribution. And I say that I hope you're not doing this to influence the way I vote. I hope you're doing that because philosophically we're going to be on the same page and you're comfortable with the decisions I make. This does not buy you access. This is strictly because you believe, like I believe, and it is not to influence, but is because you know how I'm going to vote, not to affect how I'm going to vote.
I just want to respond,
and we'll go to Representative Johansson next.
Okay. Thank you. I did not say that, and I am very sensitive to that. I understand that. I mean, I've been involved in a number of campaigns, and that's always been the criteria. All I argued for was that there is some level of accountability that exists. That there, in other words, if somebody gives me a check, I have to, at some level, have an accountability. Whether that accountability is merely, I will listen to your point. You know, I will listen to what you have to say when you disagree with me, you know, but we know already that we're going to disagree. You know, that is still a level of accountability to the contributor. And that's healthy, that's good, all that. But I'm just saying that that is something that is really taking away from the dollar contribution capability of the constituent to a particular candidate. That's all I'm saying.
I would just like to add, if I could.
Quickly, and I'll go to Johannes.
Accountability to a contributor, I have problems with. I have no accountability to a contributor. My accountability is to the laws of this state, the Constitution of the state, my constituents, and to myself.
Yeah, I didn't mean
that. And that's the conversation I have with my contributors. And I just do not accept the premise that by someone giving me a dollar or $10 or $100 makes me accountable to them. I can't go there. I don't have that philosophy. I don't believe it. I think that if anyone's out there who gives me money thinks I'm accountable to them, unless they're a constituent, and I do grant that, I'm not going to say offense, but I just don't believe it. It's not in my makeup to be accountable. Accountability to me cannot be purchased.
Thank Representative Johansson.
Thank you. Conversation kind of jumped straight into the minutia of the PACs and the groups, but in the big picture, and please tell me if I'm wrong, this limits contributions from individual Alaskans to single districts. Is that correct? Only people in District 1 would be able to contribute to my campaign. Is that correct?
That's right.
So a district that abuts my district that is economically tied and interests of what we do, for example, on Prince Wales Island that is culturally and economically connected to my constituents, they cannot contribute to my campaign, is that correct?
That's correct.
And my sister who lives in Anchorage cannot write me a check, and my brother who lives in Juneau cannot write me a check?
That's correct. The premise that I work from, and I really believe, is that our job is to represent our constituents.
I understand that. My next question is, my sister or people who live in Thorn Bay can contribute to a PAC or a political party? In which could be then passed on to me in a form of a, not a direct route, but the party gets money. The party can turn around and decide who they want to give money to, and maybe they decide they want to give money to me or a PAC. And that can happen. Is that correct? So, in effect, somebody in Thorn Bay, or actually that's in my district, somebody in Craig could not individually write me a check, but they could send it to a group, and that group could send it to me. Directly, indirectly.
Depends on how you define group. If the group is a political party, yes. If the group is a PAC, no. If a group is a PAC, the PAC can expend the money as it wishes. But the Republican Party or the Democrat Party can write a check to support the candidate of their choice. And if I might, could I add a little bit on the party deal? My background, I got started in this whole thing as a precinct level involvement and way back. And I just really built an appreciation for the fact that the parties have values, and the values come from the grassroots, you know. And so I like the fact that there's that screening by party, you know, that we originally sign on, or because it just kind of helps you identify who the candidate is. And so I think philosophically it's very good that the option is there for somebody in your scenario, for Craig, to be able to give to the party that they feel supports their values.
Chairman, if I may
follow up, sure.
In my district, I'd say probably 70%, 65 to 70% of my voters do not belong to a political party. And I would argue that probably around that same number have no idea what a PAC is. And I don't know how politics are up in the big cities, but I don't want to, I can save this for discussion, but just to throw it out there, it seems interesting to me that the individual Alaskan is being limited, yet the money can be sent through political action committees and political parties, and that's okay. But it's not okay for someone to just write a check and it shows up on APOC as an individual's name, an occupation, employer. Believe me, when people look at those APOC reports and they see eight in a row from the same company, I think they can put two and two together. But I just have a real problem with where this bill's going.
I have next Representative Dahl, then Representative Coghill, and at some point in time I'd like to have Brooke Miles come up too.
Mr. Chairman, just on that point, there was the avenue of giving was not correct, and I think when we have APOC come up here, you'll see that the scenario you drew wasn't totally accurate. There's limits and avenues that we can't use. So.
Representative Dahl.
Yeah. Well, I'll be interested to hear what APOC says when they come up. But, you know, I think your intentions are good, but I'm not sure that this is the way maybe we want it, because I think we want, as part of our democracy, encourage participation by individuals. And encouraging participation doesn't stop at a line of a district. We want people to be involved. And, you know, when we looked at the caucuses over this last couple of days ago, I saw people excited about doing this and getting involved and realizing that they can participate. And I would rather not see this participation limited to the boundary of a district. And you mentioned here that you know, as part of your sponsor statement, you said the importance of individual contributions. I'm thinking that we're not getting that from this, but I recognize where you're trying to come from. Do you want to respond to that?
Thank you. Good, Mr. Chair.
Please.
I really thank you for giving me the opportunity to respond. I think it's just the opposite. I really do. That's why I'm passionate on the bill. I think there's a level of cynicism that exists out there right now that is very high. And I think it's very high because of the fact that they don't feel like they have the voter, the constituent, doesn't have access and doesn't have, they can't really change anything. What difference does it make? They vote, you know, and then they feel like we go off and do something and it doesn't represent them. I mean, I'm characterizing, you know, hey, I can't prove this. That's my feeling as I know my constituents. Okay, I would contend that if this bill were to pass, that they would increase very much, because it increases a stake that a constituent can have in their candidate, in their representative, because the value of their dollar in a campaign contribution is higher. And I do not, if I could go back to Representative Johnson's comments, I certainly did not mean to imply that any of you are bought any more than I am or any of us. I understand we all have to deal with how we do that. I mean, that was a crisis for me when I got the first check for my campaign in 08. I had to think, okay, now how do I process this? You know, I'm taking a contributions from out of district here, and how does this work? And I think it all fits together. If HB 299 were passed, I would hope, and my intent anyway, is that there would be a whole lot more grassroots involvement in campaigns, hopefully in parties indirectly, and that was my
question. Representative Cox.
Thank you. That last little bit of discussion, I'll just give you an idea and then ask you about the bill. Campaign contributions are not about necessarily the candidate. It's about the message that needs to go into a district. And so there probably is a misperception that somehow the money being contributed to a candidate somehow enriches the candidate. It all goes to somebody else, and it goes to get that message out. And so it really is about a message to the district, and it is not meant to endear you any more or less to anybody. It's just to help you get that message out. And if it's any more than that, I'm sorry. I agree with the representative over here. It is not meant to necessarily influence me. It's just to help me get my message out. And if they agree with my message, then, you know, good on them. If they don't agree with my message, then they are nowhere near me, and I can tell you that as a fact. In fact, there are those who will campaign against me because they don't like my message. But it's not about controlling, and if it is, it was never intended to be in my mind. So, but you're right on when somebody gives you a contribution, as a first candidate, you have to process that and say, what is the money for? And I've always agreed that it was to help my district get a message on what it could be for them. So had you contemplated in this particular bill of taking the whole groups and PACs out? I mean, I think you run into some constitutional issues. You run into the freedom of association issues. But if you're going to limit the candidate to a district, it would seem to me, then you'd want to just level the whole field and say, only from that district can anybody ever speak about that candidate. And you see the problem that begins to create.
Sure.
So, but had you contemplated that?
Go ahead. To the chair of the Chicago, that is a blatant violation of the First Amendment.
Yeah. And I think, and I bring that point up to show you that by limiting that district to having all these outside influences that have advantages, and inside the district you might create a disadvantage as brought out by Representative Johnson, I think you might actually, you may not run afoul, but you're pushing the limit. And so that's the problem. If you can't stop everything else and you create this this internal problem of that district, I think you could create that problem. And I'll just give you a scenario. My district would probably be fairly easy. I can walk my district from one end to the other probably in 3 or 4 days. But there are districts that are bigger than 4 or 5 states put together. And I think of trying to get a message out and trying to get the personal contact that would bring those kind of contribution levels up, certainly mailing and things like that. But how do you get your message out to them in the short time that generally a campaign is allotted? So I think there could be some real disadvantages, especially if somebody had a very strong view and wanted to put one of these groups together to undermine them. So I tend to agree. I'm in looking at this, I think I agree with the concept that the district should be where the support base emanates from. But the fact is, it is true that that happens in the voting block. So then it's a matter of how do you get your message to those people. If you can't personally shake every hand, you at least need to get your message to them. And so I struggle with that. But I agree that the whole Freedom Association issue becomes in tension here. So you can't do away with the groups. But also, I think Representative Johnson brought up the point that if you have non-affiliated members, which I think probably half of my district is non-affiliated, they're not going to work through parties necessarily. And I don't know how you get your message out to them other than being able to get people to help you get that message out. So I appreciate the idea, but without taking these groups out, you can see the dynamic that you create. And so it's going to be a struggle for me.
Representative Keller?
Just in response, I start with a premise, you know, that the low percentage of voter turnout, you know, is very significant factor in why I brought this forward. And I think that if there is a obscure, I'm going to say, I don't mean this negatively or pejoratively, but a deep pocket that looks over all the campaigns in the state of Alaska, and he or she has an agenda, and he picks various campaigns, that what he's doing is reducing the influence of the people that might be, you know, look, because we're talking here about not getting the message out so much as who's going to be the representative, the real representation of the people in the districts. And that's why I think this is so important, because I think there are people that are not being represented, and frankly, there's a number of them that I believe that are cynical enough they don't even bother. I talk to them on the street, you know, I don't bother to vote. You know, and I think that this addresses that, you know, and I think that at a representative or a House district anyway level, knocking on doors has a huge impact, you know, and I'm sure none of you would argue with the fact that money does, in fact, you know, buy us something in our campaigns. It buys us, you know, a message out there. It makes people aware of what's going on. And I guess the question is, you know, who's being represented? If 80% of the funding for the message is coming from out of district, and I would contend that the people in my district say, what's the use? You know, I can't compete here in this world.
So. Representative Johansson, then I'd like to have Cliff Miles come forward.
Don't you think that's a question that the voters in each individual district need to decide? I mean, they're the ones that go to the ballot box and vote, and if. And again, APOC has all of the information online readily available for everybody to look at. And don't you think it's the voters of the district's decision to look at that information and decide? If they look at my APOC report and see that Friends of the Earth, which is not going to happen, contribute 80% of my campaign, don't you think it's up to the voter to understand and see that? It's all public. That's why we have the APOC there, and that's why we've spent so much money and time to get all of this stuff on there as quick as possible so it's disclosed out there. Do you not give the voter in each district the credit to decide whether or not their representative is worthwhile? I mean, every 2 years, we vote.
Representative Johansson, through the chair, it's not obvious on APOC. In fact, the numbers I gave you, the 80%, you have to do some presumptions to get that information. It's not reported in a way that X number comes from in district and X number comes from out of district. What you find, and I would contend that voters are catching on, but you go through and you start looking at campaign contributors and you begin to see the same names creeping up in a number of different campaigns. You know, that's the level of visibility that the APOC reporting has. It's not clear, you know, precisely, you know, if the money comes from in district or out of district because of the zip codes, you know, don't follow district lines, you know. So there's a ambiguity there, and I would say it's real obscure right now in our reporting process.
Representative Johansson, follow up, and then I'd like to hear from Brooke Miles.
Yeah, I'm sure these can be answered by Brooke, but do you feel that putting the money through parties and PACs is going to make it any more clear for the voter to figure out who's giving to a PAC and a party?
Representative Johansson, that surely is my intent. And if it's not, then, you know, I mean, if that's, you know, the will of the committee, of course, to say that's not the case, it's going to happen, then I'll have to respect that. But that's my intent, is that it's very fine.
Okay. Brooke, did you want to come forward?
I'd like to bring another thing forward and maybe could get an answer. This bill would probably serve me very well in my district. It's probably 6 miles long, mile wide, highly concentrated, fairly affluent. I could walk it, you know, several times during an election cycle. So this serves me very well. I mean, I really think this, on a personal level, I could say, gosh, this is a good thing for District 28. But on the other hand, you have a district like either of the two members where, and even that's, those aren't even the extremes. Representative Salmon, for example, would take how many years to see and how much money to physically go out and visit his constituents. And my concern is the disparity in districts. I mean, if we were geographically divided, like some states where you have X number of square miles as opposed to population, I can see it being a little more equitable. But I see this as a terrible disadvantage to some districts, advantages to others. Of course, everyone running it has the same or playing on the same playing field. And I do get that. But the disparity between the difficulty you're placing on some candidates, where in my case it would be, you know, I think my district's fairly affluent. I think, you know, I haven't even worked the numbers on where mine come from, but I think I could probably raise as much money within the district as I do outside the district, and I don't think it would affect me that much. But other areas of the state are going to have huge problems. And so the disparity between districts also causes a little concern in this. And I don't know if there's an answer to that. I don't know if there was a question in there, but it's just, I want to, you know.
Just last thing, one comment. And Brooke, please come forward.
I just want to say thank you. Thank you for your consideration and your thoughtfulness, and I appreciate it.
Thank you.
anybody else in the audience wishing to testify besides Brooke? Brooke, you want to come forward and see if you can address some of the issues? I saw some head nodding going on back there.
<Uh-oh. her>
I got a feeling you might have something to say. Here's my intention is that we wrap up here in the next 10 minutes because this room is going to be used for another meeting at 9 o'clock. So.
What's needed?
This is the meeting that's going to be in here next is the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, and we're talking presentation on traumatic brain injury.
Oh, cool.
Right. Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Brooke Miles. I'm the Executive Director for the Alaska Public Offices Commission. Thank you for the opportunity to comment on House Bill 299 this morning. Where the Commission has not taken a position in support of or opposition to this legislation, we do have some legal concerns regarding the provisions. With respect to the cross-district giving, as you may all be aware, when campaign finance reform was passed by this body in 1996, there were provisions that precluded lobbyists from giving cross-district. And where that provision was upheld by the state Supreme Court, in their opinion, it was clearly because there was strong evidence to support a compelling state interest with respect to that group of individuals. And on a constitutional level, we're just not sure that the court would find that for all of the residents of Alaska. In addition, with respect to restricting PACs from making a legal campaign contribution within the limits to a candidate, and campaign finance reform, and ultimately the Supreme Court's decision in the ACLU case, again, it was they spoke about the new ban on corporate contributions, which we have in Alaska, and thus the ability for individuals within a corporation to form PACs, make contributions within a limit, and then the PAC be able to contribute directly to candidates. So in both of those areas, we believe there could be constitutional and legal concerns, and suggest that you research those thoroughly before moving forward with this legislation.
Any questions for Brooke Miles?
She hit it right on the nail for me.
Anybody else? Okay. I see Christina Ellington and Roger Hull are out there, and they said they didn't want to testify, but if they had any comments they wanted to make, they're certainly welcome to come forward.
Mr. Chairman, Roger Hull is the chair of the Public Offices Commission, my boss, and so he's here watching.
Did you have any comments you want to make, Roger? Are you satisfied with what you've heard?
I'm satisfied with Brooke. We discussed it before she came in. We are meeting here today. Matter of fact, in just a few minutes, it's been office building, and it's so pleasure to be here and see the committee work.
Okay, good. Thank you for your service. Anybody else in the audience wishing to testify on this bill? And no one online? I'm going to close public testimony on House Bill 299. And we'll see if there's any other committee comments.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Coghill.
I wanted the sponsor to know that I really appreciate it. I remember the first bill I introduced, and Brooke can probably remember this, I was going to repeal APOC. Because, it was born out of an idea of how to get just-in-time reporting, and we just weren't there, and we're slowly kind of moving into that arena. So I just wanted the sponsor to know that the idea of getting the local participation is exactly the right thing. I don't know if this is the way to do it, but it is exactly what we need to do continually, not only with voter participation, but their involvement in the giving part of it to get the message out. But it's just the message, and it's just the reporting. So I just didn't want the sponsor, who is a very good friend of mine, to think that I'm just ditching him. But I, at this point, cannot support this bill.
Representative Dahl.
I just I wanted to say that I admire and respect the intent of this bill, but I'm afraid that at this point we're kind of throwing out the baby with the bathwater. We're losing. I think what we really want is more individual participation across lines. I just want to make a point here that I'm in District 4. District 3, we share a lot of concerns on a region, and they would. There's a lot of things that we share as values, and I would not want to cut off that particular support on things that we're all trying to work so hard in that message that Representative Coghill was saying. But I admire the intent, and but I feel that at this moment I would not be able to support the bill.
One of the concerns that I had, and I used my district as an example, it's a very low-income district, and it would be very, very difficult to raise the kind of money that it would take to go up against the influence of a large group of union PACs as well as some of the other individual PACs. And it's not just the contributions that they may decide to make to a political party or whether it's they go out and do individual expenditure, but it's the mobilizing of a workforce to go out and canvass the neighborhood. In this last campaign, one of the union PACs organized 20 people to go out and go door to door in the campaign. Well, if I'm going by myself, it takes me 20 times as long to cover the same amount of area as they did. And that doesn't show up. But it certainly has a tremendous amount of influence. So I think by this type of structure where we're limiting who can contribute, I think we inadvertently give much more power to those groups than we do to the individual, and that's my concern. Any other comment from anybody else in the committee? My intention is to hold this bill. We're not going to take a vote on it, but we certainly appreciate you bringing it in and give you an opportunity to, if there's some things that you wanted to amend and bring back forward, you'd have that option. But at this point, I'm going to hold the bill. Seeing no other comments from the committee, then we are State Affairs is adjourned for today. And, before we do, I didn't drop the gavel. Saturday, February the 9th, we'll be meeting here at 11 o'clock from 11 to 1, State Affairs, to hear House Bill 277 and House Bill 287. With that, State Affairs is adjourned.
Couldn't we just...